Vimana Anikaf. With contingents of airplanes. Sankulaf. Congested. Devayanena. By the spaceways of the demigods. Avataranti. Descending. Indu Mandalam. The moon planet. Avarya. Inundated. Brahmasadhane. To the abode of Lord Brahma. Atop Sumeru Parvata. Anipatati. Falls down. Translation. After purifying the seven planets near Dhruvaloka, the pole star, the Ganges water is carried through the spaceways of the demigods in billions of celestial airplanes. Then it inundates the moon, Chandraloka, and finally reaches Lord Brahma's abode atop Mount Meru. So you purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. We should always remember that the Ganges River comes from the causal ocean beyond the covering of the universe. After the water of the causal ocean leaks through the hole created by Lord Vamanadeva, it flows down to Dhruvaloka, the pole star, and then to the seven planets beneath Dhruvaloka. Then it is carried to the moon by innumerable celestial airplanes, and then it falls to the top of Mount Meru, which is known as Sumeru Parvata. In this way, the water of the Ganges finally reaches the lower planets and the peaks of the Himalayas, and from there it flows through Haridwar and through the plains of India, purifying the entire land. How the Ganges water reaches the various planets from the top of the universe is explained herein. Celestial airplanes carry the water from the planets of the sages to other planets. So-called advanced scientists of the modern age are trying to go to the higher planets. But at the same time, they're experiencing a power shortage on Earth. If they were actually capable scientists, they could personally go by airplane to other planets, but this they are unable to do. Having now given up their moon excursions, they're attempting to go to other planets, but without success. So, Tatonika Sahasrakoti Vivana Ruka Sankuladeva Yanainavatara Atindu Mandalama Varya Brahma Sadane Nipatati. So Om Meghanat Timidanda Shah Gadanjana Shlakaya Chakshur Miditam Genatasmai Shigurave Namaha. So India is very fortunate in that there's many sacred rivers in India. I mean, you have the Yamuna, the Ganges, so many different rivers there. It's much different than the Western world. Like here, you have what? The Mississippi, right? It is not exactly a sacred river. So no one will become purified by bathing in the Mississippi. Although, Prabhupada said by bathing in the ocean, you get purified. Because the rivers of India generally enter into the ocean. You understand? So like if you have the ocean here, which is the Gulf of Mexico, it's mixed with some of the Ganges water, Jamuna water. Of course, Ganges, Jamuna, and Saraswati, they mix at the Triveni. Everybody knows where the Triveni is? Yeah, Triveni. That means where the three rivers mix. And during the Kumbh Mela, people bathe in the Triveni, and other times too, but especially during the Kumbh Mela, because that's the time. There's this story in the Puranas how the drop of nectar from the nectar amrit fell in this particular spot. You understand? You've heard this story before, I'm sure. Jai Sri Sri Radha Radhakanta Gornitai Jagannath Baladeva and Subhadra. So they bathed in the Triveni. This is an interesting story of when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was at the Triveni. He was going from one side of the river to the other. And then he entered into the section where the Yamuna River enters the Triveni area. And when he saw the darkness of the Jamuna River, because the Jamuna River is definitely dark, you could see the difference between Jamuna and the Ganges. He actually jumped into the river. And everyone was afraid he was going to die. And, you know, they pulled him out of the river. They pulled him out of the river, but then even after he got back on the boat, he started jumping up and down. And it's described he was so heavy that the boat was starting to take on water. And basically, everyone was afraid of drowning because they were right in the middle, right there. And basically, they had to pacify Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And this way, they gradually, safely reached the other shore. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was going to this person's house, Balabhacharya. You've all heard of Balabhacharya before. He's the head of the Pushti Marg. Heard of Pushti Marg before? Pushti Marg, yeah. And he took instruction from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but he's quite a famous person. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu even chastised him at one time, later on in Jagannath Puri, when he went to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In any case, when Balabhacharya saw that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu put everybody in danger, because he wanted to jump into the Jamuna River, he then took Chaitanya Mahaprabhu across before the Jamuna entered. He actually arranged to not take him across the Jamuna, to go to the other side again, so to prevent any other disaster, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's ecstasy was uncontrollable. Nowadays, what you think is the Jamuna River is not actually the Jamuna River. Did you know that? Did you ever hear of this before? This is an interesting story. That the Jamuna River is blocked before it reaches Delhi. Has anyone heard this before? There's these barrages. That means, you know, dams. That's what they call them. In India, they call them barrages. Barrage. You've heard of the barrage before? No. Anyway, it's a dam. You know what a dam is, right? So they block the Jamuna water. This is very sinful. They block the Jamuna water and then send it out to different canals for irrigation. And so basically, after these dams, there's Dan. Anyway, we're talking about dams, not Dan. So after these dams, there's no more Jamuna water. There's pictures of devotees walking on the dry Jamuna bed. Has anyone heard of this before? None of you heard of this? None of you know the news? On the dry Jamuna bed, there's actually two dams there that's completely stopped the Jamuna River. And so what you're seeing downstream from those dams is not actually Jamuna water. It's the sewage water from Delhi. No one's heard of that before? You know about that, Drew. That they dam up the Jamuna. It's very sinful. They dam up the Jamuna River, and then what enters into Vrindavan and further on downstream is actually sewage from Delhi, untreated sewage from Delhi. So, therefore, we don't advise the devotees to go swimming in the Jamuna, or what they consider the Jamuna. Of course, the place is sacred, the riverbed is sacred, but the water is no longer Jamuna water. No one's heard of that before? Big scandal in India. I mean, there were many protests. Some personalities from Braj would go to Delhi and just do protests with thousands of people to protest this damming of the Jamuna River. So the Jamuna, this is a symptom of Kali Yuga. And also, as far as the Saraswati River, that has actually dried up too. Did you know that? The Saraswati River has actually dried up. Originally, the Saraswati River dried up a long time ago, actually thousands of years ago. It may run underground, that's what they say, but as far as what people see, it's completely dried up. Completely dried up. And what the scientists, not the, well, I'm talking about scientists, anthropologists or archaeologists say is that the Saraswati River was just a concoction. But then later on, those scientists, or different scientists, were able to discover through satellite imagery that there was the bed of the Saraswati River, the ancient bed of the Saraswati River. So they corroborated, in other words, they proved that there was a Saraswati River. And this way they were able to date the Vedic civilization. You know, 5,000 years ago, there was a civilization along the Saraswati. Originally they thought the oldest civilization was along the Indus River. You've heard of that before? The Indus River. Mohenjo-daro, you know, the civilization, the different, when they dug up around there. But then later on, when they discovered the Saraswati, or the dried up bed of the Saraswati River, they were able to excavate many cities and villages around that ancient bed. So in this way, it shows that there was actually a very sophisticated civilization existing many thousands of years ago. Of course, we know that millions of years ago, tens of millions of years ago, hundreds of millions of years ago, there were sophisticated civilization on Earth during the Satya Yuga. But one of the reasons they don't think that there's an older civilization on Earth is because they don't find too much writing older than about 1 or 2,000, older than, let's say, 2,000 years ago, 2,500 years ago. The reason they don't find too much writing is because people were so intelligent, they didn't need to write. You understand? They didn't need to write. Why? Because they could remember. Writing means that your brain doesn't work properly. That's why you need to write, isn't it? Think about it for a second. If your brain works properly, you remember everything that you're told, then why do you need to take notes? Why do you need books? You don't need any of those things. But Kali Yuga, Manda Sumanda Matayo, Manda Bhagya Padrata, everyone is so unfortunate, short-lived, short memory, that you can't even remember what I said 5 minutes ago. If I went around the room and asked you, well, you know, what did I say 5 minutes ago? You'd say, ooh, I was sleeping. So, isn't it? So, therefore, we need writing. And therefore, they didn't have writing because people were more intelligent 5,000 years ago. Why you need writing? Very, you know, very interesting understanding. So anyway, so you have these three major rivers, the Ganges, the Saraswati, and the Yamuna River, and the Triveni is where they would all meet. Now, the Ganges River is very, very interesting. It's a very special river because it's already used for deity worship. So you're not supposed to use Ganges water for deity worship. Did you know that? Because Ganges water has already washed the lotus feet of the Lord. So you're not supposed to you're supposed to use Yamuna water. Did you know this? No, you didn't know this. That Ganges water, sometimes the people try to use Ganges water for deity worship. But Ganges water has already been used for deity worship. It's already the remnants. I mean, it's already not only washed the lotus feet of the Lord, it's washed all the shilas that are upstream. You know, the Shalagram shilas that are upstream. In the Gandaki River, which enters into the Ganges. Anyway, so that's a different story. So the story of the Ganges coming down is here as far as, in this purport, as far as how the Ganges came to the higher planets. But how the Ganges came to us is quite an interesting story. It's told elsewhere in the Bhagavatam and in the Mahabharata. The story involves King Sagara. King Sagara means the king who was born with poison. It's interesting. And the reason he was born with poison was that his father, I think it was Mandata, if I remember correctly, but I may be wrong about that, but his father had several wives. And the problem with having several wives is what? Does anyone know?
Jealousy.
Jealousy and envy. You know, it's enough responsibility to have one wife, but if you have two or three wives, they get jealous. Just like that King Chitraketu. How many wives did he have? Does anyone remember? What?
One crore.
One crore? Yeah, 10 million.
10 million.
Yeah, one crore, you're right. He had one crore wives.
That's pretty big, isn't it? That's more people than are in the city of New Orleans. Can you imagine if everybody in the city of New Orleans, Drew, was your wife? No, he would commit suicide if that was the case. I mean, he already experienced things. So anyway, 10 million wives, and they all became envious when one wife gave birth, and they killed the kid. Similar thing happened with with Sagara's father. They had several wives, and one wife became pregnant, and the other wives were envious, and they put poison there. But the kid was born, that's what it means, Sagara, with poison. He was born with the poison. He wasn't killed, in other words. So Sagara was executing the horse sacrifice, Ashvamedha. It was like in the previous yugas, there was the Ashvamedha, Gomedha sacrifice. Gomedha means like a cow sacrifice. Ashvamedha means a horse sacrifice. And they were able to rejuvenate the horse. And before they could execute the sacrifice, the horse had to wander around with a challenge thing on his, on his head. Similar thing was done by Lord Ramchandra when he sent the challenge horse around, and Lavan Kush stopped the challenge horse. You know that story? Yeah. So Sagara sent this challenge horse around, and you had this envious King Indra was stealing the challenge horse, and he left the challenge horse one time at the ashram of Kapila Muni, Lord Kapila Dev. And so Sagara, he sent his sons to find, he had like 100 or 1,000 sons, to find the horse. And they were looking all over for the horse. And they dug through the earth, and they made sort of the ocean beds. There's a story like that. Because previously the ocean had been dried up by Agastya Muni. Do you all know that story? That Agastya Muni, he was helping the demigods attack the demons. The demons were under the water. So what he did is sipped up the whole ocean. And when the demigods killed the demons, the demigods said, okay, you can let the water out again. But Agastya Muni burped because he had digested. You've heard this story, right? It's an interesting story. It's in the Mahabharata. He burped because he had actually digested all the ocean water, salt water. And so the sons of Sagara dug down, and they actually dug the ocean beds too. And they went through the earth, and finally they came to the ashram of Kapila, Lord Kapiladev. And they looked at Lord Kapiladev, and they thought, he has stolen the horse. He's a rascal. And so because of their offense and anger towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who had appeared in the form of Lord Kapiladev, it's described that their internal fire in the body burnt them to ashes. Actually, the Mahabharata tells a little bit different version of the story, but the Bhagavatam story is the true story. In the Mahabharata, it says that Lord Kapiladev burnt them to ashes, but he wouldn't do that. Prabhupada explains, quoting the Acharyas, that it was actually their own envy that burnt them to ashes. So if someone is very envious, it burns them. It's like burning like fire. So anyway, what's that? What'd you say?
He said, yes, it does.
Yes. Yes, it does. Burns like fire. Someone's very envious and angry. It causes cancer and so many other diseases. What they've discovered is that people, many of the people who have cancer, they have like repressed anger towards someone or something, and this is actually eating away at them, and the cancer is a manifestation of that. It's interesting. I mean, there are other causes of cancer too, such as smoking and other things like that. So anyway, so they burnt, and they were instantly cremated. So all their skulls, there's a picture in the Bhagavatam of this. All their skulls were lying there, skulls and bones. So they were very upset, like Sagara and his son Amsuman were very upset about this. You know, what are we going to do? We have to liberate them because, you know, there was this loyalty to family members that we have to help them and liberate them. And the only way to liberate them is to bathe them in sacred water. So Amsuman performed austerities to bring the Ganges down. He wanted to bring the Ganges down. He wasn't able to do that. His son, Dilip, also did the same thing. And he wasn't able to do that. He wasn't successful. And finally there came his son, Bhagirath. You've heard of Bhagirath before. So Bhagirath, I mean, the Ganges is something that's called Bhagirathi, is like this. So Bhagirath performed austerities for many, many years, standing on his toes or one leg. And finally, Ganga Devi appeared before him and said, I'm willing to come down, but I have two objections. One objection is that I will come down with so much force, I'll actually split the earth planet. And that'll be a big problem. Another objection is, all the fools and rascals will bathe in me. You know, and dump their karma off. Because when you bathe in a river, you actually leave your karma there. Maybe you should go bathing in the river. So, it's like if you touch someone's feet, you give them your karma. Prabhupada said that. And therefore, if someone touches our feet, usually we like to touch them right back, give them their karma back. It's like a short circuit, you know. They give them their karma back. So the Ganges was very disturbed. Just like it's also described in the Bhagavatam, when the ordinary people go to the holy place, they actually leave off their, some of their contamination in the holy place. And then the sages, they come to a holy place to purify even a holy place. You know that? Because people go to the holy places, and nowadays they do so many sinful things in the holy places. And I've even seen in Mayapur and Vrindavan, there's prostitution going on, isn't it? You seen that? It's horrible. I mean, people come from other countries and there's prostitution, and like Prabhupada talking about hotels. It was interesting, when I was young, when I first joined the movement, Prabhupada was talking about negatively about hotels, and I never understood what he meant. Because I thought, what's wrong with Ramada Inn and Hilton? But in Prabhupada's day, hotel meant prostitute, place for prostitution. Does it still mean that now?
Some hotels, yeah.
Some hotel. Not in America, I'm talking about in India.
America, there's hotels,
yeah,
prostitution.
Yeah. So in India it was like that. Prabhupada also said you should not eat in hotels. There's several statements Prabhupada did. Don't eat in hotel food. Prabhupada talked very negatively about hotels. But of course, I mean, there's different hotels. So nowadays, in the holy places, some of the most sinful activities are going. Prabhupada was so careful, especially in Vrindavan, that Prabhupada didn't want men and women, even if they were married, associating very intimately. Interesting, isn't it? He would send them to Delhi to associate. It's very interesting how Prabhupada was very, very careful. And even in Mayapur, one time there was a husband and wife, and they were reading Bhagavatam together. And, sitting close, and Prabhupada said, this is not good. Prabhupada was very much concerned with the reputation of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So Prabhupada was very, very strict. So anyway, so the sages go to the holy places to purify the holy places. In fact, the most important thing you can do in the holy place is what? Does anyone know? Take a bath?
They're from the holy place.
Yes, because the Bhagavatam says, one who goes to a holy place, yatirtha buddhi salilei la kari chit, Janeshu Abhigeshu Sa Eva Gokara. You know that verse? Yatirtha Buddhi Shalile Nagar. One who thinks that going to the holy place is just taking a bath, right? Then he's like an ass. Sa Eva Gokara. Because the asses and the cows, they take baths too. So the real purpose of going to a holy place is to hear from the self-realized personalities there. And they make a place a holy place. Like every place that Prabhupada stayed is a holy place, like 26 Second Avenue in New York, and Prabhupada visited here, this is a holy place, of course the deities are here, that makes it a holy place. and the chanting's going on, that's a holy place. Prabhupada went to New Taliban, that's a holy place. And the deities, of course, too, and the devotees. So the Ganges' objection was that all these fools and rascals will bathe in me. And Bhagirath said, basically, also the great sages will bathe in you and they'll purify you, so you don't have to worry. And then as far as you're going through the earth planet, you're concerned about that. Lord Shiva, I'm going to perform austerities to Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva will catch you. So Bhagirath began to perform more austerities. Om Namo Shivaya, Shivaya, Shivaya Namaha, Shivaya Namaha, Shivaya Namaha for many, many years. And Lord Shiva appeared before him and agreed to catch the Ganges on his head. So the Ganges came through and hit Lord Shiva's head, and Lord Shiva could see that the Ganga Devi was too proud. You know that story? She was too proud, so he just kept the Ganges within his hair, because he has matted locks, not just bald head like us. So he had, you understand? Matted locks, so he kept the Ganges in his hair, and when she felt humble again, he let her out. And also Bhagirath prayed to Lord Shiva, let her out. So Bhagirath led the Ganges through her whole course, going to the ocean, but when she was going to the ocean, she ran into this sage, Janu. And this Janu, he got so angry, what did he do? Does anyone know the story? He swallowed the Ganges. And Bhagirath prayed again, and Ganges came out of his ear. The sages could do things like that. I mean, sometimes people hear these descriptions and they think, huh, how is that possible? But with the mystic powers and spiritual potency, these sages could do so many amazing things. So anyway, so he swallowed the Ganges came out. And Bhagirath led the Ganges into the ocean. And also the Ganges came to the netherworlds where she bathed the sons of Sagara, and they became liberated. So this is the story of the advent of the Ganges. So the Ganges water, simply by bathing in the Ganges water, one becomes free from all sins. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared on the bank of the Ganges. So it is a very important river for us. However, one other point before we end class, because I want to end soon, is that more important than the Ganges is cell phones. Every class it goes off, at least one cell phone. I mean, it's just amazing. So more important than the Ganges... More important than the Ganges is associating with the saintly personalities. And this is described in the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam's, the Sanskrit is Swardunyushpo Nusheveya, that a moment's association with the sadhu is more purifying than repeated bathings in the Ganges River. Of course, we do go to the Ganges, we do bathe, it is very important for us, but the most important thing is sadhu sangha, sadhu sangha, sarva shastra koi lava matra sadhu sangha, sarva siddhi hoy. So we should take advantage to hear shushushro, jai shi shi radha radha ganta, shushushro shradhanasya vasudeva gata ruchi, Shan Mahat Sevya Vipra Punya Tirtha Nishevanat. That hearing from a great personality, Shradhananasha, with faith. Vasudeva Kata Ruchi, one with a great taste or developing a taste for Vasudeva Kata. This is actually service. Shan Mahat Sevya Vipra, the intelligent person, he will. Worship in that. Sevaya. It is the Mahatsevam. Ahoravi Muktes. San Mahatsevaya Vipra Punya Tirthana Shevanat. And this actually makes the place a holy place. So this is actually the most important thing. We go to the Ganges, but wherever we are, we should hear and chant about Krishna. And that brings the nectarian Ganges of Krishna Katha into our heart. As Kapila, Lord Kapila Dev states, what is it? Bhavanti Ritkarna Rasayana Kata Joshana Dasha Upavarga Vartmani Shraddha Ratir Bhakti Anukura Mishrati. Does anyone know that verse? Satam prasangan mamavirya samvido bhavanti ritkarna rasayana kata tadoshanadashu apavarga vartmani shadavratira vakti anukramishyati. Very important verse. That devotees, they meet together. Satam prasangan. They have the association, the sadhus meet together. Mamavirya samvidaha. They have talks about Krishna's heroic activities. Krishna is speaking. It's actually Lord Kapiladev. Mamavirya samvida. Bhavanti ritkarna. And that nectarian ocean or river of Krishna's pastimes goes from the ear, the heart, the ear, the karna, to the ear, to the heart, sorry. The karna means ear, rit to the heart. Bhavanti ritkarna rasayana, and it cures all the material diseases, katha, that talk. And then gradually, one develops faith, taste, and love of Krishna. Anukramishati, they follow one after the other. It's a very important verse, isn't it? Does anyone know that verse? No? You should know it by heart. Devotees should learn these verses. When I was a new devotee, we were learning one verse a day. People don't study now to learn verses, right? They become more advanced. But Prabhupada said we should learn these verses because this is a way like a lawyer in court can prove his case. In other words, we're not speaking on behalf of our own paltry realization. We're speaking on behalf of Krishna. We're repeating Krishna's words. So, okay, any questions or comments? About anything I said, about the Ganges, about association with great devotees, take advantage. Barrage, it's called a barrage, yeah.
So that's the water is not coming?
None of the water is coming. Except in the rainy season when it overflows the top of the dam. You can look on the internet. You'll see pictures. Some of my disciples actually went up at Yamunotri. And they saw the pure Jamuna River, and they followed the course down, and they took pictures. I mean, it's common knowledge now in India, and they took pictures of the barrage, and then there's pictures of them walking on the dried Jamuna bed, right after the dam. It's interesting, but it's sad. It's very sad. The signs of Kali Yuga, the sacred rivers, like the Saraswati, dries up. The Jamuna is dammed. So you don't have the Jamuna water entering into Braj anymore. It's very bad. Yeah.
Are they having any success at all in influencing politicians or the government of India to release the Jamuna, destroy the dam?
I hope they have some success. I don't.
Petitions and there's.
You know how it goes. I don't want to get into politics, Indian politics, right now in class, but you know how it goes. That it's very difficult. It's very difficult to change things like that because you have, not only do you have, the government did that but the farmers upstream are using that water to irrigate with. Do you understand what I mean? So if they take the water and don't let the farmers use it, there'll be a revolution there from the farmers. So you can look it up on the internet. You'll see.
So then we use
When you use water to bathe the Lord, it becomes a Ganges water. Because it's bathing the lotus feet of the Lord. I mean, it's Charanamrita. Charanamrit. Becomes all the sacred rivers. It actually becomes as good as all the sacred rivers when you bathe the lotus feet of the Lord. Yeah.
Seems a little odd that, there can be two versions, one in Mahabharata and one in the Bhagavatam, about whether or not it was Lord Kapila who birthed him to Ashton, because it's the self-same water, the Yaks.
Well, I can explain that. There's actually about 84 different versions of the Bhagavatam. And some of them are not the Bhagavatam. Sorry, I got it wrong. The Mahabharat. There's only one version of the Bhagavatam. But the Mahabharat, there's 84 different versions, because the Mahabharat, according to Shripad Madhvacharya, has been tampered with. In other words, things added, things subtracted, and things changed within it. I mean, you have there's one South Indian version of the Mahabharat that talks about the birth of Vyasadeva, you know, with Parashara Muni and Satyavati. It says the Parashara Muni and Satyavati got married. And the North Indian edition of the Mahabharat says that Parashara Muni met Satyavati while she was rowing the boat, and Vyasadeva was born on an island. And, you know, Parashara Muni created the fog. I think you all know that story. So, therefore, Sripad Madhvacharya said the Mahabharat has been changed dramatically. Whereas the Bhagavatam has actually been passed down untouched into cyclic succession. You understand that it's a little bit different. The Bhagavatam, Bhagavat Purana, has not actually been altered since. Anyway, we have an unbroken chain of disciplic succession that we can trace, whereas the Mahabharat, we don't have that. So therefore, there's been changes, like anything. I don't want to compare it to the Bible, but, you know, the Bible has been so many changes, additions, subtractions, and take books out, put books in, by different kings. So therefore, we don't accept the Mahabharat with the same level of faith and authenticity that we do in the Bhagavatam. And when there's a difference in stories, we accept the Bhagavatam story rather than the Mahabharat story.
Well, yeah. Also,
yeah, but there's the rendition of the Bhagavatam that we have in our disciplic succession, and that's the edition we accept. That the Acharya, with the Acharya... No, not that we know of. The scholars analyze these 84 or 85 different editions of the Mahabharata to try to determine what's called a critical edition. They did this, I think, about 150 years ago in the 1800s, and they were unable to come up with a completely, you know, authentic critical edition. It was so difficult. Whereas the Bhagavatam, we have the commentaries by Sridhar Swami, we have the commentaries by Sridhar Swami, Madhvacharya, of course Bhaktisiddhanta, the later Acharyas like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And we can trace out the unbroken chain of disciplic succession with the Bhagavatam. So we accept the Bhagavatam, Bhagavatam's version. You'll find many differences. In the Mahabharata edition that I've read is the Ganguli edition. Some of you heard of Ganguli, no? That's the best one that's translated into English. And you'll find a lot of differences. And simply because of that, you know, the things of Madhvacharya, who is one of our acharyas, you know, we're the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya, he said that himself. So I'm just quoting him. It's not my opinion.
The abridged.
Yeah. I mean, there's many abridged Mahabharats. I mean, just like you have many Ramayans. I mean, we have the original. Yeah, we do have the original Valmiki Ramayan, but you have the Tulsidas Ramayan. Different parts of India, you have different versions of the Ramayan. Generally, when I'm going to places like Fiji, they all read the Tulsidas Ramayan. They've never even heard of the Valmiki Ramayan, basically. And Prabhupada said the Tulsi Das Ramayan, I don't want to offend anyone, contains a tinge of Mayavad philosophy. Because Tulsi Das was not a pure devotee. I mean, Tulsi Das, he was the one who said, you know, beat your mridanga, your dog, and your wife. Did you know that? And I forget the exact Sanskrit, Hindi, it's Hindi. It was a Kimcha, Bhagini, Dolak, Dolak. Does anyone know that verse?
Rakta Bhagini, Nintamani, Rakta Bhagini, Parashara
Yeah. He knows. And, you know, I tell that sometimes when I'm preaching to people, you know, from Bihar or people from UP, and I said, you accept this? And I said, you ladies, do you agree with this verse? That you should be beaten? Do you agree with that? Tulsi Das says that. Prabhupada said Tulsi Das had a very bad marriage.
Got bitter.
He got bitter, and he, you know, he, some of his bitterness is included in the Tulsi Das Ramayana. But anyway, I mean, we appreciate his sentiment, but he's not a pure devotee. You know, so we go by the Valmiki Ramayana. Does that make sense? And we go by the Srimad Bhagavatam. These are our authorities, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, etc. Yeah. Question?
Are there any more sources of information about these tanker ships, if you will, that, you know, distribute the Ganges here?
About the what? About the Ganges?
The ships that distribute the Ganges water.
The ships. I don't know about any more information. Maybe in the other Puranas. You know, what sort of technology they use. It'd be interesting.
That the Ganges water shouldn't be used for deity worship because it's only offered. But also in the deity worship, you can call the sacred rivers as part of the deity worship. And one of the rivers, the first one, is Ganges.
Ganges. Well, yeah, because if you go to Vrindavan, they'll tell you not to use the Ganges for. I suppose, I don't know, anyway, that's what they say in Vrindavan. I mean, because I'm a Brajabasi, that's all I know. Like in Vrindavan, they tell you, use the Yamuna water for deity worship, not the Ganges water, because the Ganges...
There ain't no Yamuna water.
What?
But there ain't no Yamuna water.
Well, you know, I have some. My disciples went up to the Yamuna tree, and they got this nice pure water, it's wonderful. And we use it for deity worship. Or you call the Yamuna. I mean, I guess you can call the Ganges too, but the actual Ganges water has been used to bathe the lotus feet of the Lord. I mean, you don't use Charanamrita to bathe the Lord. That's the logic in Braj. You understand?
Yeah.
Did Yamuna directly bathe Krishna? Yeah. I mean, you could say Lord Chaitanya bathed in all the holy rivers of India, so you shouldn't use any holy river. But right now, Jamuna is not bathing Krishna. So, anyway, that's what they say in Braj. I was just giving a Braj explanation.
I have another question.
Yeah.
Now, these are the pastime stories that might be authentic and depict some...
Which pastime stories?
Any stories that written.
No, the Bhagavatam stories are authentic.
Yes, but how about actions that are changing time, circumstance, like Manusmriti?
Yeah. Yeah, no, but the Manusmriti, many of the Vedic literatures have been changed. I mean... many of them have been changed. That's why we concentrate on the Bhagavatam. That's all. Mm-hmm. That's on the Bhagavatam. Like Prabhupada never instituted that we follow all the details of the Manusmriti, or even all the details of the Hari Bhakti Vilas. You know, because there's many injunctions there. Like in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, it says not to eat carrots. The Hari Bhakti Vilas has not been changed. I mean, we have that. But it was written to attract ritualistic brahmanas to Krishna consciousness. So you're not supposed to eat carrots. Whereas Prabhupada made carrot halva, he ate carrots. You know, so what can you say? Well, according to some of the ancient Puranas, it's the bones of sages, bones and blood of sages. The reason for that, I mean, I'll give you the reasoning that they use, that the ritualistic brahmanas use. Because in India, the carrots are blood red. They're not yellow like carrots in America. So they say it's the bones and blood of sages. You're not supposed to eat the bones and blood of sages. That's all.
Beets are also blood red.
Beets, I don't know. I think beets were brought to India. I don't think they're originally in India. They're not originally. Potatoes were never originally in India. A lot of these vegetables, tomatoes were never in India before. You don't read about Lord Chaitanya eating tomato chutney.
No.
What's that?
Jagannath Puri, they don't offer.
They don't offer potatoes.
Potatoes, no tomatoes.
And no carrots either, right? Yeah.
Well, that was considered, they're just considered low class and not fit for the deity.
Well, they weren't originally there. They were brought by the Western people to India. Like tomatoes, potatoes, by the Irish. Actually, the Irish. They brought it there. I think I'm going to have to end because I have to get ready to leave. So, anyway, we thank you very much. Thank you. It was a nice visit. And you're all doing nice service. And Shraddhadev is organizing everything nicely. He has the heart of a Bengali mother. Very impressed with his love for the devotees. It's like everyone, you can call him Ma. Ma Shraddhadev. So anyway, so thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Okay, we got 10 minutes to leave. Okay, you're coming too, or?
He's going.
He works at the airport. Okay, 10 minutes, I'll be ready. This is me offering my obeisances. Yeah, let me offer obeisances to the Prabhupada and the deities. Jai, Shishi, Radha Radha Kanta, Radha Radha Kanta Ki Jai. Jai Shri Prabhupada.